steep, steep hill. It was as though one were already halfway to heaven. I disremember the name of it.
Mount Moriah.
Yes, that was it.
There, among the tall trees, looking westward to where the land was bright, Suki Smith had overseen the interment of her entire family.
There was a little Jack left. I raised a stone, least I could do. I really missed them, was what I had carved on the square stone.
You have a great deal of ill fortune in your life, Suki. What were you doing in this blistered wilderness with a murderous person of restricted growth?
Suki smiled, lying back, with her knees slightly parted, showing several inches of thigh.
I needed a guide. Had a sister. Last I heard from her was around 10 years ago. Thought I'd pay her a visit. Seemed to be a good idea at the time. Still does. She was living with a miner out in a frontierville called Hope Springs.
Eternal.
How's that?
Nothing. You must forgive my wandering mind, my dear.
Anyway, that's why I was out here. Fell in with a small family group going my way. Found a haven. Canyon with sweet water. They decided to stop. Just me and their oldest boy went on. He was the little fuckhead who sliced me. Been trying to get inside my honeypot for 3 days and nights. He lost patience this morning and... Well, you saw what he did.
So what now?
It was beginning to get dark. She smiled at him, her teeth white in the gathering gloom.
Now, Doc? Now I show you how grateful I am for your help.
A narrow stream meandered its way toward the rim of the canyon, tumbling over moss-slick pebbles through a series of tiny green pools. Ryan lay flat and buried his dry, crusted face in the icy coolness, closing his eye, feeling the strength flowing back through his tired, dehydrated body. He had an almost overwhelming temptation to suck in the delicious elixir, fill his mouth, throat, and stomach again and again. But he was well aware of the danger of such stupidity. He hadn't been there himself, but he remembered J.B. telling him of the occasion. A young woman from Warwag 2 had wandered into the desert. When the search party eventually found her, she was almost off her head with the heat, her brains broiling in her skull. It had been close to nightfall, and they'd made a camp, sponging down the woman's body with tepid water, allowing her only small sips, despite her desperate protests that she wanted more and more to ease her thirst. In the night, she'd crept from her sleeping bag and crawled to the drinking supply. The rescuers had been awakened only seconds later by the noise of her dying. The effect of the sudden vast intake of cold water had sent her whole body into shock. She had vomited, copiously and violently, her arms and legs thrashing at the darkness until her heart failed. Ryan sipped a few blessed mouthfuls, then sat up, allowing the drops from the stream to trickle over his neck and chest. He cupped his hands to splash more over himself. Trader knelt on the other side of the pool, lapping at it like a thirsty dog.
Take it easy.
Feel better already.
Ryan tried to stand, but was surprised by a wave of dizzy nausea, making him stagger a few steps to one side. He steadied himself with a hand on one of the tall pines.
Oh, yeah. You look like a pot full of fucking Jack. You better sit a spell, friend.
After a while, Ryan felt for the pulse at his wrist.
It's steadying down to normal.
Then we can start moving again. You young men, Ryan. All spit and no ball.
Take you any day, trader. With both hands tied behind your back.
That'll be the day, pilgrim. The way you look back there on the trail, you'd have struggled to punch your way out of a wet paper bag.
What are we going to do about that place?
Ryan pointed beyond the trees toward where they could still see the column of gray smoke climbing from one of the chimneys of the building at the edge of the canyon. Trader slung the armalite across his shoulder.
Well, we should take a wreck for starters. Then, if they look like they got some serious power, we might ask them for food and stuff. If they look like they don't have no power, then we could go in and take some food and stuff. How's that sound, John Dix? Aw, fuck. Ryan.
Sounds good.
A small sign was set by the side of the narrow, overgrown path that had led them within 50 yards of the side of the building. Even after a century of weathering, the words were still very legible. Open to residents of Hightower only.
What the hell's that mean?
Despite all the long years that they'd known each other, Ryan had never been entirely convinced by Trader's claim not to be able to read or write. Yet he'd never quite managed to catch him out.
Place must have been called Hightower. Maybe some kind of rooming house or hotel or motel or something like that. Sign means only people living there can go on this trail.
Pre-dark, isn't it?
Sure looks like it.
I don't see any guards. Doesn't seem much like a Strongville to me.
Ryan looked around.
I don't see anything else except the big house. And a part of that's in ruins. Could be nothing for 100 miles in any direction. Only one way to find out. Get in closer and keep our eyes open.
There was a row of neglected yews that had probably once been a neatly trimmed hedge. Now they were over 6 feet high, ragged and yellowed. From behind them, it was possible to see that the ruins had once been a resort hotel. It must have been a marvelous location, close to the edge of the High Canyon, with a wonderful view across its own grounds. But the nukes and the quakes had combined to change all of that. There had been major subsidence, and the long two-story building was now a lot closer to the brink of the chasm than it had originally been. In fact, the whole of its south wing had fallen in decades ago. The rest seemed to be teetering drunkenly on the brink, and it looked as though a single sparrow fart could push it into oblivion. The roof had gone from most of the hotel, as had many of the elegant wooden balconies that had decorated the canyon side of Hightower. But there was clearly life. As Trader and Ryan crouched under cover of the line of yews, they saw several men and women coming and going, and a gas truck, its exhaust belching blue fumes, drove away from the front of the building.
Could use that.
And it figures they've got supplies of gas as well.
Well, not many weapons on show. Just some rebuilt hand blasters and one sawed down.
We going for friendly first?
Sure. Got your honest, steadfast, and true smile ready in place?
Here it is.
Oh, fuck. Maybe we should just forget friendly. Go for terrifying. For fuck's sake. You can do better than that teeth-bared leer.
Let's go, okay? And forget jokes. Traveler south from Seattle. We lost our horses and supplies in the quake last night. Could use a meal and maybe a bed for the night.
Sounds good to me.
The grass in the hollow was damp, with long, thick tussocks. A narrow stream flowed over the top of the cliff, turning the area below the rim into a swampy morass. Abe stood in it, aware of the wetness, aware of the bright sun that glittered down on his head, and the beads of sweat that had been trickling off his mustache, aware that J.B. wasn't all that far behind him. But overwhelming all other sensations, he was aware of the cottonmouth that was coiled around his feet. A normal cottonmouth, or water moccasin as some people call them, would probably grow to 6 feet in length, its body not much thicker than the forearm of a muscular adult male. Though not as lethally poisonous as the desert rattler, the cottonmouth has a bite that could kill. The snake that lay basking there in the warmth of the hollow, lazily enjoying the remnants of its last meal, a full-grown wild burrow, was at least 25 feet long, with a body that was as big around as a beer cask. It wasn't taking much obvious notice of Abe, its head turned away, its eyes hooded, its mouth slightly open. The tip of its tongue was in its constant flickering movement, tasting the air around itself. But the last 6 or 7 feet of its powerful body had lazily encircled the man's ankles, clamping them together. Abe found that the air had been sucked from his lungs, and his tongue had become dried and swollen, all in less than 10 seconds.
J.B.!
I see it.
J.B.'s voice came from a dozen yards behind Abe. The huge, muty snake responded to the sounds, opening its mouth wider. Abe stood perfectly still, not daring to go for his gun. He could see the curved, hollow teeth and knew that they would act like hyponeedles, pumping poison into his flesh. The thought of how virulent the venom would be from such a gigantic reptile made Abe feel sick. The day seemed to darken, and he swayed, closing his eyes.
Don't faint on me, Abe. Can't risk a shot.